So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
Ike, Isabel, Wilma, Dennis, Floyd, definitely Katrina. This odd hodgepodge of names, they were not my friends at all. They were all killers. These were the hurricanes that I covered from 1999 to 2008 when I was a national correspondent for the Fox News Channel based in Chicago. There was a time in my life when I didn't have many kids at that point. I was an adrenaline junkie. As soon as I would see a hurricane churning off the Atlantic coast or in the Gulf Coast, I'd be on the phone right away, calling the New York assignment desk. Put me in, coach. Send me there to the front lines. I want in. Why, you might ask, when you watch TV, do you see those reporters just standing there like idiots hanging on the light posts? Right? Why do we cover it? The answer is, it's because all of you watch. Such was the case in 2003. As you laugh, I was actually for one night a national punchline. I was covering Hurricane Isabel off the coast of Virginia Beach. It was a Category 5 storm at one point. At that point, Fox News, this was pre-commentator days pretty much. We are around-the-clock news, hard news. And so we were filling time. The storm, it did die down, but it was still mighty strong. And here we were in the middle of the day, I don't know what report it was, but I'm standing there literally 45 degrees, goggles protecting me from the sand that was flying in my face. I had a wind measurement reader in my hand. And I remember at one point saying, this storm is so strong, it's almost taking down my pants. It really almost did, because Jay Leno and Jimmy Kimmel both put that clip on for one night. You'd have a hard time finding it, though, because it was before YouTube and all that other stuff. So I just actually found that clip. I'm looking forward to putting it out there at some point. Fast forward 2 years to 2005. This was not a storm that you could laugh at. Hurricane Katrina, I know you guys all know that name. She was a beast, right? Hit Florida first, came out then into the Gulf Coast. Category 5, 175-mile peak winds. And as thousands of people were being evacuated out of Louisiana and New Orleans, I was going in. Here I was, a father with a two-year-old son at that point. That two-year-old, by the way, is now 16, and he's somewhere in the back, James, taking photos for me. Thank you, James, being here on your school night. We also had a six-month-old on the way. Some of you might be saying, what the heck were you doing? But again, this is a time in my life I really love that kind of stuff. And duty called. When I got there, which was on the 27th of August, it was a Saturday, middle of the day, it was beautiful in New Orleans. The attitude was laissez-faire. New Orleans, where the motto is, let the good times roll. People are drinking, having beignets. Heck, there might have even been a second line parade that day. Didn't anyone know there was a hurricane that was about to barrel down here, right? Fast forward one more day to then the 28th, Sunday, and we are then starting to hunker down. The storm is clearly coming at us. We took refuge that night in a W Hotel on Poydras. If you're familiar with it, it's in the Central Business District, about 10 blocks from the Superdome. And the wind was that strong that there is no way you want to be staying in an upper floor hotel room. So we went inside a business lounge in the interior to try and get some shut-eye. There were bricks, there was debris, there was, I don't know what was hitting the window, but I literally was under a table that night. I didn't get any sleep. In fact, I found myself often wondering, would this be the last night of my life? Fast forward, morning comes. We feel a sense of relief that we had actually dodged this bullet. Although we went to the side of the W and noticed that the whole side had been sheared off. We weren't that far away. Hurricane Katrina had stormed ashore, not as a Category 5, but as a Category 3, still 125 mile peak, 25 miles, peak winds when it came ashore, still pretty strong. But hours later, when we were able to get outside, kind of that Monday, the storm came in morning 6:10 a.m., so it was kind of mid-afternoon. And we went where most people would want to go, to the French Quarter, right? Now, sure, there was no power at that point. I'm not listening to that thing, by the way. There was no power. I got my thing in my head here, and I'm sticking that story. There was no power. The only way we were able to really find out what was going on was by talking to people. Cell phones were out, the cell phone towers. So there was optimism everywhere in the French Quarter because the Abita was flowing. There goes my voice. The Abita was flowing, and they were serving oysters, I remember, in a bar. And I said to myself, we're definitely going home in a day or so. This is a nice story. We dodged the worst. And then the knock came on my door the next morning. So it was Tuesday. So the storm came Monday. So it was 24 hours later. And my producer, who had been flown in, wasn't my regular producer from Chicago. She was hysterical. The levees, they've been breached, broken, right? This is a podcast about broken or breaking, right? The levees have broken. And there's water all over the place. New Orleans is flooding. You need to get out of here right away. I'm taking the satellite truck. I'm going. I was like, all right, I'm not leaving. So my videographer and my audio technician, we decided we're going to stay. We're not going to abandon our post. We had a satellite phone at that time. And I figured, worst comes to worst, a boat would pick me up in a couple of days on the second floor. We had food. I was going to be okay. Well, I went out, I wanted to see what was going on. You only had to walk just a couple of blocks to the north toward the Superdome, and there were fish swimming in the street. Even more dismaying was the chaos, the sea of chaos I could see all around me. We were starting to hear reports of martial law being enforced. That really didn't turn out to be true, but it was that bad. There was rampant looting. We're hearing about police precincts being fired upon by armed, roving mobs of people. It was very disconcerting to be out there that day. We had a post, though, to fill, and we would get on the air from our satellite phone about once an hour. There was a book called Leave No One Behind, and it talked about the evacuation of University of Tulane Hospital of 1,200 people. Can you imagine that? 1,200 people being evacuated out of New Orleans. And I didn't know that standing on that corner there at Carondelet and Poydras, that I'd play a role in that book. I was just doing my job, so I thought. I noticed out of the corner of my eye at one point, a sea of people, all dressed in green scrubs. I thought to myself, why are all those doctors and nurses out there? That's kind of odd. And being a reporter, I walked over and started to talk to them, and sure enough, they weren't doctors. They were parents of pediatric patients, and the kids were critically ill. The kids had all been medevaced out, but the parents were separated. So here you have parents in this land of chaos, and their kids are in Texas. Can you imagine how you would feel, parents? And they were hopeless, and they were wet. They had just been dropped off there by Department of Wildlife and Fisheries boats. People thought they'd be safe. They actually came to this corner because there was a rumor running rampant in the city at that time that buses were coming to downtown New Orleans to pick up people and take them to safety. Obviously, that couldn't have been any farther from the truth. It was at that point where I said, I have to do something. So I grabbed one of the leaders of the group and I said, please come with me. Let's go to the W Hotel. It's about a half mile away. I'm thinking to myself, at the very least, let's get you some shelter, some clothes, food. I don't know what I was thinking. And I went and I spoke with the general manager and he said, you know what? I actually can do you better. I'm about to get some bus loads, van loads of people out of here. And if you hurry up ASAP with all these people, they're about 20 people or so, we'll get them out of here. I was like, great. So we ran back, but I told the group, look, you have to trust me. No one can speak a word about this. You just need to come with me and trust me. Because if we talk about this, there's so much chaos, I was worried about people getting on the vans and taking their seats. As I watched these people get on these vans, I started to choke up. It was an act of selflessness that was far away from the spotlights. It just seemed like the human thing to do. And later, one woman told this author, again, I didn't know I'd be in this book, said, "We're extremely grateful for this reporter coming to our aid in this time of need, and he definitely saved our lives." One more day, and then my Katrina story ends. So it's Wednesday now, and the city is in utter chaos. It's the afternoon, the national media is starting to get kicked out of all the downtown hotels because looters are everywhere going in hotels. There is desperation, it's palpable. I was able to get a call in on a payphone, remember those things? Yeah. Call into the New York desk, and they essentially said, "Jeff, you've done your job, you've done enough, we need to get you out of there." We had been up essentially for 5 days in the blistering heat, in the humidity. We looked like crap. I sounded worse than I sound tonight. I was just kind of muscling it through. And I said, "Okay, where do you want me to go?" They said, "Houston. There's an exodus of people from New Orleans going to Houston. Do you have the strength to drive there?" And we said, "Yes, we do. But before you go, we want you to file one final report for the O'Reilly Factor." Okay. I'm standing out in front of the W. I'm filing my report. And I notice out of the corner of my eye, a bedraggled man. He was about 50, but he looked like he was going on 80. And he dipped a water jug into the ornamental fountain, the filthy fountain right outside the hotel. And he gets ready to put it to his lips. I said, "Excuse me, Bill. Sir, that water's dirty. You can't drink that." Had my audio technician come over, give him some water, offered to help him. It was a small moment, but it was at that moment that I realized the urban grid in New Orleans was gone. The bottom had fallen out. Hurricane Katrina ended up killing about 1,800 people. When the levees broke because of Katrina, it swamped about 80% of the city. Estimated economic damage loss was $1.25 billion, the most expensive Atlantic storm in history, equaling that Hurricane Harvey. I'm grateful to you for your time. Thank you. Good night.